Thank you, Christina. Good evening, everyone. I get to see you again. I'm Kim Kelling, and I'm the chair of the Board of Governors for Leadership Tallahassee. I hope you all know what Leadership Tallahassee is. It's a wonderful program. I see many class members in the room tonight. I'd like to welcome you all to the annual Tallahassee Town Hall. Tonight's program is brought to you as a collaboration by the Village Square, City of Tallahassee, Leon County, the Tallahassee Democrat, and Leadership Tallahassee. It really does take a village. We are deeply grateful to our generous sponsor of tonight's program, Bible-Based Church and Pastor Derek McGee. He's in the back there. Thank you. In addition, this program is part of a project funded by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Fund at the Community Foundation of North Florida. Now, I know you're all follow Twitter, so we would encourage you to tweet with us tonight about the program. Any thoughts that come to mind, any inspiration, please tweet away. But if you'll use the hashtag TDVSQ, so it's capital T, capital D, VSQ. It's my pleasure to introduce our very distinguished panel for the evening. And I'm going to start here, City Commissioner Curtis Richardson, Gil Ziffer, our mayor, Andrew Gillum, and then we have our county commissioners, John Daly, Kristen Dozier, Marianne Lindley, and Nick Maddox. And now, I can't believe I'm forced to do this. You know, I work for WFSU, but I have to introduce Skip Foster of the Tallahassee Democrat. You know, this is, I want to say we do all get along in our community.
We do, and thank you for that warm introduction, Kim. So look, this is a sacred gathering here of elected officials and the people who they represent, and so it's a serious time. We're at a serious time in our nation and our community. I appreciate you all being here, but I really want to proceed in that tone as we get started. So the first question for the panel is, have you ever climbed up on the El Jalisco donkey? And can you describe your dismount?
Skip, are you just asking?
Yeah, I guess that's just a rhetorical question, unless anybody has a story they want to tell there. Scott Maddox isn't here, says Chris. Okay, good. So, all right, so we're going to get started talking a little bit about development that's been in the news recently, certainly in the last couple days. And before we get into the specific things that are happening at Cascades Park, I want to start on the county side, so you're first in line there, Commissioner Daly. How do you govern when so many city and county residents appear to hold the following two irreconcilable positions? We shouldn't have urban sprawl, but we don't want urban core development if it's in our backyard.
In 30 seconds? Well, I think one of the unique things about, first of all, I want to thank St. John's for hosting, and thank you, Skip, and all the partners that are here. I think one thing that we should always remember that we're very proud of is the fact that in Tallahassee-Leon County, we're not a Palm Beach County with 24 different municipalities. We're not a Pinellas County with, 27 different municipalities. We're Tallahassee-Leon County. We have one city. We have one county. There's 12 of us. We don't always necessarily agree on all the issues, and that's democracy, and that's how it should be. But we are friends, and we do work well together. Having said that, it's important that we continue to have conversations, community conversations like this, so that we can make sure that everybody's voice is heard, gather as much information as we possibly can so that we can make the right decisions. Look, on all of these big decisions, somebody's going to be upset, somebody's going to be pleased. So it's our job to hear from everybody, gather the information, do our homework, study as much as we can, work in collaboration to try to make the best decisions that we can to move the community forward.
So, Commissioner Dozier, when does not in my backyard not matter? When does not in my backyard get trumped? What are the interests that supersede the interest of a small or even large group that has a personal interest in a particular policy or decision?
It is a tough question. You're glad you didn't get that one, huh? I think it's a good question. I will echo Commissioner Daly. Thank you all for being here and showing up. This is a huge part of how we need to address these big questions. I think that there are issues that are good for the community as a whole. The first one that comes into mind is filling in the big ditch that has run down the south side forever. There's a lot of bad decisions we made historically, putting a lot of different things on the south side, and that disrupted some property moving through the neighborhood behind FAMU, and it is a good for everyone in that neighborhood, even if it affected some property holders. On the other side, I think that to this issue, your first question and this question, the way that infill may have been done in the past is different today. If we had developed Gaines Street in the 90s, it would not have rain gardens. It wouldn't look the same. We didn't know the same thing about wide sidewalks and that contributing to the economic development and the neighborhood. I don't think we've had enough of a conversation about what urban infill could look like today and the differences there. And there are some fears that, quite frankly, I think, you know, existed in the past that we need to address. Additional housing, things like that, different types of housing might be okay. But we need to dig into that conversation first before we move forward with different types of plans so we get buy-in and we hear everybody's concerns.
Transition over here and get much more specific now. Where do the three of y'all currently stand on this Myers Park, on this Cascades Park development issue? Where do you stand, Curtis?
Well, you know, I voted against it when it came before the commission the first time, and you know, this whole question, it's a difficult balancing act. It really is. Tallahassee, we're a growing city. You know, the commission made a decision before I came to start focusing on urban infill rather than continuing to grow, skip into the suburbs where there was no infrastructure, but to fill in some of the spots in the city where the infrastructure already exists and the cost of the development wouldn't be as much. But at the same time, we've got neighborhoods within that urban services area where people bought their homes 20, 30 years ago. They raised families. They're retiring now. And they just had no idea that those neighborhoods would begin to be encroached upon by the development that's occurring now. And so we just need to have this kind of discussion about where we're going to grow and how we're going to grow if the urban infill model is what we're addressing at this point.
Okay, so you voted against it. It sounds like nothing's really happened that's changed that position so far. How about you, Commissioner Ziffer?
So I voted for it for the rezoning and for us to have that discussion. But I'm going to say this because I've been out of town, so I wasn't here to go to that planning commission meeting. Not that I probably would have. But
tough break.
But I've been reading the articles And these are the words that I saw in the articles. Fight, win, war, beat. I mean, I heard all these words that I heard in a presidential campaign this year. And I haven't heard talk, discuss, compromise, sit down. I haven't heard any of that. In the time since this vote, I've had two people reach out to me and say, can we sit down and meet and talk about this? Everything else has been a one-way communication. That's it. And that's not the way we really do things here in the city. Now, I'm going to say I am still for something happening there. I don't think any of us consider probably what was laid under the table is appropriate. But something probably needs to happen. And for anybody that thinks that's a pristine, never been touched parkland, go over there and really take a look. Because it's a lot of asphalt, it's warehouses, it's a tower, it's chlorine. It's everything but that. There are green spaces, but we can improve that, and we can work with the neighborhood, and we can make it better, but we don't do it by talking about war.
Okay. Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, I appreciate the question, and I also voted for advancing this conversation, and it's consistent with the positions I've had since being on the commission. I mean, I don't know, a decade ago or so, we decided we didn't do a moratorium, but we pretty much stepped to the line of a moratorium on expanding the urban services area. Because there were complaints at the time, largely driven by folks who were very concerned about our environment and the rapid expansion of the boundaries of the urban services area. And we said we weren't going to do it anymore. We were going to concentrate and reorient our rules to encourage urban infill. I think it's important to do that. I don't think we can be stewards of our environment until it's inconvenient. And I also get that this is extremely deeply personal, especially for the folks who live in what is a beautiful area and part of our city today. And so it's not a straight line. I think it has curves and weaves, and I think we've got to figure our way through it. But if conserving in our land and urban infill is important, and making sure that we have affordable housing options at every level of the income rung in our community and inside the urban services area, this is a debate that we have to lean into. But I think it's a false choice to say that we can't have neighborhood preservation and conservation and no development. I think you can do them both. I think you have to be thoughtful about it. And I think that's the process that's the throes of the process that we're in right now, that I think we're all good and well-meaning people, that we're going to come to a conclusion that's consistent with, one, our community's values, but also our own deep love and appreciation for this part of our city and preserving what makes this community really great. And it's also neighborhoods like the ones that we're talking about tonight.
Okay, thank you. Moving over here to Commissioner Lindley, the downtown Walgreens closing recently made some headlines. My question for you is, isn't this kind of everything wrong with economic development, and isn't this an example of the kind of stuff happening that a lot of legislators are criticizing as corporate welfare run amok?
Oh, you mean the putting of community redevelopment money into that that corner? Well, I don't think so. I mean, that was most lately before the building, it was an abandoned gas station service station. Last year it got about $70,000 in property tax paid, and the year before a little over $70,000. So the money that the CRA is putting in as an investment to upgrade that area will be paid back in property taxes that would not have happened had it been left the way it was for a long, long time. So it's an investment. It's tax increment financing is a very honorable way to do it. It's not a giveaway, and it's within certain areas where we see, in the purest sense, blighted spots that we try to improve, and those become a catalyst for other areas to build along. So I'd say, yes, it was a good investment, and it is in this one rare instance an occasion where the legislature may be wrong.
Okay. So transitioning to a question from Mr. Baines in the audience, and we'll go to you, Commissioner Maddox. You're the only one we haven't asked a question of yet. And this is related to economic development. This week, the legislature, there's been a lot of talk about economic development in the legislature, and in particular, incentives, and even more specifically, reducing incentives. Does this give you any pause to question the use of the local sales tax money for economic development?
No, it does not give me pause. I believe that the process that we went through to have those projects that we have in our economic development pot right now was a very extensive project. And I think all of them lend to helping grow the economic development scene here in Leon County. And so I think that we have a good balance of what we need here in Leon County as far as what's going on at the state. I mean, that's what's going on there. But I don't think we made a mistake by what we did there. I think that money is going to be well spent and put into the right places. But I would say that regardless of what happens with the economic development money at the state, whether they keep it or leave it, I would like to see at least, if they're not going to spend that money on incentives, that they spend it on infrastructure, because infrastructure can be seen as economic development as well. But as far as what we're doing here, I wouldn't change a thing. I think we're doing the right thing.
Okay. Commissioner Daly, are you comfortable with the pace of progress by the new Office of Economic Vitality, and what do you see as that organization's biggest challenge?
Yes, I am pleased with the pace of progress. Since we have created it, we have hired new employees. to come in to work for our community. We've had to staff up. We've had to put together our economic development plan moving forward. It was a big change going from the previous structure to the current structure that we have. We've got the meat on the bone. We are all on the same page, the city, the county. We're moving forward together. We are always going to have challenges when it comes to economic development. I mean, I think this also stems back to discussion going on the state level and the previous question, Commissioner Lindley. If anybody had the magic solution on how to bring businesses to our community and help our businesses grow, I mean, all communities are struggling with that. And so what we're doing is we put together the right team. We have spent a lot of time putting together the right plan. We are executing that plan. We just went through a great exercise in 2014 where together as a community, we decided that, yes, we want to continue the penny sales tax. And number two, these are exactly the projects that we want to spend them on. I think it is a prime example, and other communities could look towards us of how a community can work together to move forward. But identifying exactly what needs to be done in every specific case, sure, that's always going to be a challenge.
All right. How about you, Commissioner Dozier? Same question.
Same question. I had a lot of concerns going into this process a year ago, and I was happy to make the motion that was nearly unified at our October meeting to move the strategic plan forward. So I do think we are on the right track, and I am pleased by working with the staff. We've got a lot of projects going. They are meeting with and coordinating with partners in a way that we had not seen in the past in our economic development arena. And I think bringing that organization into Blueprint may present some challenges. I still have this concern because we only meet three times a year. And I think we may need a little more hands-on approach. I think that was part of the discussion. Mayor Amanda brought this up and others that we'll need to look at in the future. But I do believe we're on the right track. I will just one last thought say that, and disagree a little bit with my dear colleague, Mr. Chairman, we have a good plan, but I don't think it's quite ready to be executed. The strategic plan that was presented in October was a good first step, but the way the staff framed it was this was a work in progress. And there's a lot of other things going on, and I think the biggest role of the EDO, an economic development organization, is to be a catalyst, to partner with, and to cultivate a community that grows small businesses and supports them. So I think we got more work to do, and I think we need to hear from the community as we move forward.
Okay, let's come back over here to Commissioner Richardson. A question from Patricia Powell. Patricia Powell. How is the city and county, but the city as it pertains to you, addressing increasing issues with homeless women and veterans, as well as affordable housing for the low-end working class?
Yeah, that is a very good question, and the mayor touched on it in his opening response. We have realized that the cost of housing in this community is rising. I was astounded to find out that the population at the Hope community, which is a community for homeless families, has almost doubled, if not tripled, in the last year alone. I was out there just the other day. I often take clothes and other items to donate. And just to see the number of children at the Hope community, suggested to me that we've got to do something to better provide affordable housing and low-income housing in our community. We both commissions recognize that as an issue. We recently had a joint workshop to address the issue. We've got a work group now that's been formed. They're looking into the issue and studying the issue, and we'll bring back recommendations to the commission. We do have some projects going now. There's one going up in Frenchtown that will be a mixed-use development, and I think that's the direction that we're going is mixed use, where we have some low-income housing, some moderate-income housing, but also market-rate housing all combined together to address the issue of the lack of affordable housing in our community, Skip.
Okay. Commissioner Ziffer wants in on this.
I do. I read a book recently that went back to the original implementation of the Fair Housing Act and how for, well, it's probably over 30 years now, that effort has basically dwindled off to really not being very effective. Mainly it's because of implementation. The key is we have the need for both affordable and low income, but what we really need is we need different people from different backgrounds of different color living side by side. Because otherwise we end up with what we have now, which is basically voluntary segregation, which is a real problem. It's a big problem. So I think we need to really consider how we move forward with affordable and low-income housing so it's not just for this color or this section or that section. It's an opportunity for all people to potentially live next to each other. And that's a big discussion. And it's fallen down on a national level, and we need to look at it at a local level because we solve problems locally. That's what we do. And whether the federal government's with us or without it, we need to figure out a way to make that work.
So I want to align with the comments of my colleagues on this, but I also want to tie it back to your earlier question about incentives because Tallahassee is a special place. Roughly half of our property in this city is off the tax roll. 50% of it we don't collect taxes for. We've got two state universities. We're obviously the capital city, and so the state government is a huge part of our industry, and so we actually have to be on the cutting edge of trying to do some things differently as it relates to economic development. And while Walgreens may be a thorn in our side possibly at the moment, what about Danfoss Turbo Corps that the city participated in, which I think the average job is something like $60,000, and they're not even looking necessarily for engineers and for scientists. They're looking for blue-collar folks who can work the machinery. They've expanded not once, but twice already in our city, and I understand are looking at additional opportunities for growth and expansion. And so we may lose some, but on the aggregate, on the whole, I think we have to stay in this game of economic development. And what I'd like to see happen is this concept include what it means to prepare the individual worker for the jobs that exist in today's economy. So not just the incentives that exist on the side of what you may provide for a business, but what kind of training do you provide for the folks who are out there looking for the job opportunity but don't have the 8 or 6 or 12 months of training that they need to walk into the jobs that exist right now and are available right now to them in this community? So we may lose some, but on the whole, I think it's a strategy we have to lean into and be as smart about it as we can be.
Okay, let's come back to Commissioner Lindley, and a theme is developing from our studio audience here. It's actually not a studio, but we have a lot of questions on parks and public land. So I think Lee Metcalf asked a good kind of core question. What is your stand on when public land can or should become private land? What are the criteria or the standards on that, if ever?
Let me think about this one a second. Well, we know, help me out here, Kane. I think there are a lot of examples of that happening when we do the infill business, you know, so that's something that we all have been thinking a lot about already tonight. I know that this is coming from the Myers Park situation most likely, and I think there's probably going to be a solution to that. I think the more we talk about it, we're going to find that there are ways to do some infill probably on that property. If we don't, we're going to revert back to problems of the sound system and the noise pollution from the amphitheater. So I think we're going to just end up going around in circles if we say a blunt yes or no. So as a lot of my fellow commissioners up here have said, we're going to have to talk about this. There's going to be a way to find a solution. And I think that applies universally when a piece of public land seems ripe for development by some private owner. So I don't think there is ever one solution or one answer.
Is there anybody that thinks once public, always public, and it should never go back to private? You think that?
No.
You want to talk about that?
In regards to
So let me, before you answer that, is there anybody that thinks once land becomes public, that's it, Never can be privatized under any circumstance. Okay, so nobody thinks that.
Well, probably some conservation areas, I think. Yes,
I don't mean, there are probably some public lands that you would say should never be converted, but no one would throw a blanket over and say no, because that has been asserted as a position that once public, always public. I want to make sure nobody agrees with
that.
Can
you define, I mean, is public
city-owned.
Public land is city-owned?
Yeah.
Okay, just as an example, there are probably 10 parcels on Gain Street the city owned, the CRA owned.
You'd give away for a...
things have worked well down there. We've got students that are no longer living.
Right. Okay, just want to make sure I understand. Okay, I want to get to Commissioner Maddox on this, this park land, public land. So there's two different things, right? All park land is public land, not all public land is park land. How do you feel about this issue of when that land could or should be privatized?
I think when the proper conversations have happened for compromise to be achieved, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer in it. I think when you throw stuff on constituents without their input in it, then they fight back. But there's a level of dissatisfaction and compromise that happens on both sides that we have to be willing to accept. The municipalities shouldn't get everything that they want. But in achieving what we're trying to achieve in this urban infill, our constituents have to understand that they have to compromise a little bit too. And so in the situation that we're talking about, no, public land shouldn't always be public land. Where it makes sense and where compromise can be achieved and where things can be placed in a way that it does not devalue nor change the total complexion of a neighborhood, I think it needs to happen if it makes sense.
Okay, so staying on the environmental track, there was a lot of debate post-Hermine about two things. One we'll kind of get to in a minute, and that's response and all that stuff. The other is, what do we do about the tree canopy and how the effect that it has when there's bad weather? Where do you think we are? Let's see, I guess I'm back to you, Commissioner Richard. Where do you think... when it comes to that side of the post-Hermine equation, assessing what should happen to our trees, and keep in mind this audience question that is asserting that we flatten land and clear cut the trees, and I know they replace them, but you can't replace a 200-year oak with a 10-foot magnolia. So where do you think we stand on that right now?
You know, it's interesting, Skip, because I live in an area on the south side of town where it seemed like every other day our utilities were going out. And they told us it was the squirrels at one point and, you know, the limbs growing over the lines. And then, of course, Hermine came through. But we were part of the pilot project that looked at, you know, trimming the trees back. And I have to say, that worked for our area, not just our neighborhood, but our area, because the utilities have not gone out as frequently as they used to. But again, that's one of those delicate balances, because one of the things we treasure in this community are our trees. But what we've learned now in these last three incidents, I was totally shocked at the amount of damage that was caused by this rainstorm that came through just the other day. And 3,000 of our neighbors were without utilities for a number of hours. What that suggests is that we are going to have to look at, and there were recommendations in the report that came from the county. You all did a phenomenal job with that. But one of the things that we're looking at is an urban forester to make recommendations to us about how we can address, you know, the tree issue and the impact that has on our utilities in these weather incidents, but at the same time maintaining what is clearly valued in our community, and that is our trees.
Okay, Commissioner Lindley, you wanted in on this?
Well, I just wanted to say, yeah, we do have an urban forester in place as of a couple of months ago, and there is a lot more talk now on the Canopy Roads Committee that I'm on working with about maintenance and taking care of our trees all along. And I think for a long time there's just been this preserve the trees and save the trees feeling, because we do all love them and it adds a lot to the look and feel and quality of life. But there is a whole kind of turnaround now that we do have to take care of trees just like you have to take care of the roof of your house. So I think there's going to be more maintenance, and we're going to have more of a overall plan of throughout the community. Another thing that's come up has been the idea of getting some rebates or vouchers or something to help people pay for taking out trees that are certifiably dangerous trees that also might be affecting public utilities and so forth. Some communities have some of this. We know that taking out a tree in your yard, even if you know it's about to fall in your house, can cost thousands of dollars. So if there's a way to incentivize responsibility on private properties, you know, hope something will be able to work out.
Okay. Commissioner Ziffer, what do we need to do to improve the relationship between Tallahassee, Leon, and the leaders of state government?
Actually, that's a really good question.
Well, thank you.
It's a good question, and I have these different roles now because I'm a city commissioner here in the city of Tallahassee that's the home base for state government and our governor and all sorts of other folks. But I'm also incoming president of the Florida League of Cities, and so on some level I still have to represent cities going to legislature. And the fact of the matter is we need to get passed, and it's difficult, but I've met with the governor's staff, and I've set up appointments to meet with Speaker Corcoran's staff and Senate President Negron to sit down and talk about city issues and state issues for the most part. I mean, there are 330 bills that come out of the legislature every year, 300 of them nonpartisan. There's 30 that you really hear about. We need to sit down. We need to have those conversations to let them know that we're here to help them, but by the same token, we need some help too. Cities can solve problems, counties can solve problems, local government solves problems. Please don't tell us everything and every way we should do things, and don't send us things that we can't afford. But by the same token, there are things that we can do to help implement what they're trying to do on a state level. It's having that conversation. It's not going to war. It's not fighting. It's not winning. It's working together. And that's what I think all of us are going to try to do a little bit better job with.
Sure.
Example of that is our CRTPA, or the Capital Regional Transportation Agency. We have developed a wonderful working relationship now with the Florida Department of Transportation, and we're beginning to address, working with them, many of the infrastructure needs that we have in our Capital Regional area. And so that's one example of where we are working with the administration to address local infrastructure issues.
Okay, Mr. Mayor, anything on that?
Well, it's not always written up, and it's not the most popular thing, but we really do work together all the time. A lot of the folks who work within these agencies call Tallahassee, Leon County home. They go out of their way to figure out ways in which they can be helpful to us. I meet with the Secretary of the Department of Transportation, the previous one. We now have a new one, but pretty frequently. We have a texting relationship as well. I do talk to the governor outside of hurricanes. And we also, you know, was just over meeting with the Senate president talking about our legislative priorities. And so we need as many channels, frankly, into the state government as we possibly can. But I also want to be clear that when they put forward legislation that is going to clamp down on our ability to do what is our job, they're also going to hear from us, i.e. Senate, House Bill 17, that precludes local government, city, county from any regulation. And that's a huge deal. Everything from water quality to local taxation to any of the things that we think are consistent with the values of this community. And we're a big state, a diverse state, and the uniqueness of each of these cities and counties is important to maintain in the context of the laws that get passed. So we will hold hands and work together at every opportunity. And when we disagree, we're also going to inform them that we disagree.
Okay. Commissioner Daly?
Yeah, I want to wholeheartedly agree with the mayor coming from the county side as well. First of all, we are in a very unique position because we do have Commissioner Ziffer, who's coming in as the incoming president of Florida League of Cities. We also have Commissioner Maddox, who is the first vice president of the Florida Association of Counties. You should be very – and Brian Deloge, who's currently the president of the National Association of Counties. The mayor is absolutely correct. Unfortunately, it seems that some of the public spats always get printed in the paper. 90% of what we do is behind the scenes, working with the agencies, working with the administrations, working on constituent issues, and we do have a very healthy relationship with the city and the county with state government. The mayor is absolutely correct. Many state employees call Tallahassee home, and they love our community, and we do have good working relationships. But I will also stand side by side with the mayor and say, home rule is a very big issue. You have 412 municipalities in 67 different counties, and you cannot pass one rule and treat everybody equally. And there are going to be times when we can work together, and then there are times in the legislative process where we do need to lock arms and say, no, we disagree. We've got to work through this, and we've got to push on behalf of the community. And I agree 100% with Mayor Gillum and the city commissioners that have previously stated we do have a good working relationship, but we also have to stand up for what's best for our community when the time is right.
Okay, I got to take my glasses off to read this one. This is from Juan Escalante. Juan, raise your hand. Where are you? Okay, so I want to read this from Juan, and I think we're on, we'll go to Commissioner Dozier here. I'm curious about how local law enforcement will handle the application of the president's executive orders on immigration. I'm a beneficiary of a program known as DACA, which means that I'm an undocumented immigrant whose deportation has been deferred by 2 years. I'm afraid of what President Trump's executive orders on immigration will mean for me and other immigrants in Tallahassee. How can we be sure immigrants feel comfortable interacting with local police without fearing they may be targeted for deportation?
Juan, thanks for standing up and for asking the question. The specifics on this, I will say, for the City Commission, they directly oversee Tallahassee Police Department, so I think they can dig into the specifics in our sanctuary city, and very glad that they're standing by that. And on our side, it is governed by the sheriff, but I think our new sheriff has made some statements about this recently, so I support efforts that have been implemented in sanctuary cities in the past, but I'm going to draw back from that for a second and say I heard a report last week of some universities becoming sanctuary universities. And in our community, in every community, I know it's been said by a lot of folks, I heard someone say everyone comes from somewhere else. That isn't true. We know that. There were people here before others came to this land, but most of us have ancestry that has come here by choice or not from someplace else. We're working through a lot of different issues. And the way that immigrants have contributed to the society, I mean, we've all heard these comments from building the auto industry to our agriculture industry to construction, where I worked for a long time, and others, is essential. It's critical. We have not drilled down and had this conversation. Canada did it. They've got a good immigration program, and they let a lot of folks in, and they don't have problems. We have just used this as talking points for years and not really drilled down to get to a fair process and that recognizes that people like Juan are great for our community, that we want them here and we want to keep them here. So I think we have to do everything we can to recognize that, to stand up, and in our community particularly, when professors and students can't come, that is affecting our economy, that is affecting our future, and this is not the direction we need to go.
Mr. Daly.
I had a conversation with the sheriff just last week specifically on this issue and how it deals specifically with corrections in Leon County. First of all, we do not have any illegal immigrants in Leon County Jail. I asked him specifically with what's going on with the federal government and the statements coming out of the White House, how are we going to deal with this? And the sheriff told me unequivocally, we are going to follow the law to the T. If you are arrested on a local charge or state charge and you go through and you have your due process, once that due process is over, we will not detain anyone here in Leon County. Now, if a federal judge issues a bench warrant, we will follow the law. We will detain if there is a bench warrant because we have to. That is what we have to do. This is coming from a white paper that was drafted from the sheriff's office. However, we will not be detaining people just to detain people.
Okay, so I want to ask the city folks. First of all, I was handed a note that the Ninth Circuit kept the stay of the ban in place, so just some news there. On the sanctuary city issue... Okay, so the Village Square people don't want you to clap. I'm not saying I don't want you to clap. So, Sanctuary City, where are we on that for Tallahassee? Is that something, what are y'all's position on that, and what is coming around the bend in that regard? You're not getting no eye contact here, so well, who wants to take that?
Well, my colleagues all can obviously speak for themselves. As I understand it, our Tallahassee Police Department do not act as ICE agents. We do not arrest people based off of their status of documentation, which is the piece that really got underreported in this in the president's actions, is that it wasn't just folks who commit crimes, felonies. He talked about rapists and, you know, all of these descriptions. The executive order criminalized people based off of their status of documentation. Let's be clear, because this language bugs me to no end. People cannot be illegal. Actions can be illegal. People cannot be illegal. And it is dehumanizing to the greatest extent of humanity to refer to people as illegals. An action can be illegal. A person cannot be illegal, right? All I'll say on this, because I get worked up and act outside of myself, all I can do is speak for myself, which are that as I understand the ways in which our law enforcement acts is that they do not act as an extension of ICE. Right. There is a federal agency that has that role, and they will continue to play their part. If you get arrested for a crime that you commit in this community, you are adjudicated through the normal criminal justice system, as is the case for anyone. And at the point that the federal government comes in with a subpoena and then asked for cooperation, that's a whole nother matter. But we don't, by in and of itself, criminalize people based off of their status of documentation.
Okay, so I want to tack away here, because I think we're going to probably find a lot of agreement, and I don't want things to get a little too hot. So, but I want to stay on law enforcement, and I want to ask you, Commissioner Ziffer, if the sheriff's department approached the city and said, we'll do law enforcement for the city for millions of dollars less than you're paying for it now, which means you would get to spend that on other stuff or give it back to taxpayers, would you be open to a conversation on that? In other words, consolidation.
The sheriff's department now basically covers the entire county.
Right.
And the city obviously covers the city limits. I've said this before. I'm not a big believer in consolidation. I don't think it's worked in air service. I don't think it's worked in banking. I don't think it's worked in anything. And the fact of the matter is we have two different law enforcement agencies that work real hard to try to do a good job for their particular jurisdiction. For the most part, the sheriff's department covers more out in the county area, and clearly we don't go out there. Those are two entirely different kinds of law enforcement. Our police department has to deal with things the sheriff's department, for the most part, doesn't, and vice versa. So at this juncture, I like Tallahassee Police Department. I like what the sheriff's department does, and I'm not willing to look at that. Now,
not willing to look at it?
I don't think the sheriff's department's
going
to come
to us.
No,
I want to make sure I understood you. That's all. Yeah.
Well, what you suggested was is if they came with some rock-bottom price. I think that's probably at least worth looking at, but at this point, that's not something I'd probably expect nor would be in favor of doing.
Okay, and staying on crime, Commissioner Richardson, from Matt. I can't read Matt's last name. Other than community policing, which TPD implemented some time ago, what are your plans to curb the crime and violence in economically segregated communities?
Well, I wanted to address the issue of consolidation, because that is an issue that this community has grappled with over the years that I've lived here, the 40 years that I've been in Tallahassee, and the number of times that it's been on the ballot, the community has voted it down, and we've had functional consolidation in a lot of different areas, like planning and growth management and some other areas. But I think it's time for us to have that conversation again as a community, because it's been the law enforcement issue that has been the sticking issue. And the question was, do we have an elected sheriff, or do we have an appointed police chief where the police officers have bargaining rights? And so I think now is a good time for us as a community to have that discussion to determine, with Tallahassee being the only municipality in the county and 80% of the land area, I don't think it would be a bad idea for us to begin to have that conversation again. In terms of fighting crime, I think it is imperative that we get communities involved, neighborhoods involved. I have worked personally with the Wilson Green neighborhood, my own neighborhood, to establish crime watch initiatives. Jim Cruz, a former county commissioner, is here that was the founder of the Council of Neighborhood Associations. And so it's imperative that as neighborhoods, we begin to take back our neighborhoods and look out for each other and let the criminals know that we will not accept that kind of behavior in our neighborhoods.
Okay, Commissioner Maddox, let's get you in here. This is Alexandria on Twitter, so it's a nice short question. Love mixed housing. How to make it succeed without gentrification?
Actually, that's a great question. I took a housing tour a few months back around the state of Florida as well as outside the state of Florida. And one thing I think you have to do if you're going to address housing without gentrification is you have to, in some kind of way, invest in the people that are there as well. When you talk about replacing what we have now as Joe Lewis projects, when you talk about replacing what we have now as Orange Avenue projects, if you just going to level buildings and build something nice there and not look at the people there and figure out how you improve the folks there, and then you're not going to do it the right way. One of the places that we went, New Orleans, they talked about the fact that it was the heroin capital of the world. It had actually been washed away by the hurricane. They rebuilt it, and they gave the people who were there the first opportunity to come back. It's 98% minority. There's market rate. There's mixed. I mean, it's mixed as it can be. But one of the things they talked about was some of the people there had never paid a light bill before. Some of the people there didn't know how to operate a air condition. Some of the people there needed some life skills that had to be provided in order for them to understand how to get themselves in a better situation. And so gentrification happens very easily if you just build buildings because you push people out. But gentrification can be slowed if you can think about, as you build those buildings, how you're going to also put the human services in place to address the needs of the folks that live there.
Okay. Yeah.
I completely agree with Commissioner Maddox, and I'll just add two things that the county's been working on and one that the city's worked on and a program they have that I think get to this point. The REACH program on the city side and the PACE residential program on our side, which we took a vote just this week, yes, Tuesday, to get into place finally. These are programs that help fund energy improvement fixes for low-income homes particularly, but for others as well. That helps the bottom line. It is a health factor within the home, but it will help people stay in their home. We also have had a home expo. It's actually one of my favorite events of the year. This is also one of them, I have to say, and speed dating too. You should come to that. That it is a home expo. It's at the Amtrak building, and folks go there, and they learn anything from pressure washing to small repairs around the house. And as Commissioner Maddox said, a lot of people don't know that. You're not learning how to change an air filter when you leave your parents' house. Not everybody does. You have a father like mine, you do, but not everybody does. So those basic skill sets, it improves people's ability to take care of their homes, their investment in their homes, their capacity. And I think those are some very, you know, real examples of how we're working to address these issues. And but there are places that could be redeveloped as well. So it does go hand in hand, and we need to get those programs out more and more.
Okay. Anybody else want in on that? Commissioner Lindley?
Real quickly. I think one of the best things we're going to be doing in the next year is our workshops and work on affordable housing and workforce housing. And one of the things that has come up, and you've probably run into it too, Nick, is how housing really is a great It's the thing that mostly drives your health care as well as everything else in your life. And I was listening to some folks at one of our meetings that was saying zip code is more important than your DNA, because where you live affects almost everything in your quality of life, and your health is a big part of that. The dangers that you experience, the poverty, the lack of access to health care, and so forth. So housing really permeates throughout a person's life. So right. It's a big holistic issue.
Okay. So the host want me to not have every single person answer every question, but we're going to break that rule on this question. So I'm going to start here, and I want everybody to answer, and maybe squeeze your answer down a little bit, but I think it's important, given where we are in our, you know, tonight and in our nation's history. Beyond being here tonight, what are you personally doing to keep the level of political discourse elevated?
Elevated. I'll go first.
Okay. Saved by Commissioner Maddox.
Yeah, I'll go first.
The call to the bullpen.
This is actually a pretty simple one for me. I actually was just recently voted onto the board of Village Square. And one of the things that we've been doing is the whole idea of trying to conquer race relations within our community and being very upfront about it. And you'll be surprised about how many of those conversations when we have Race to the Movies, or when we have the event that we had at the Moon just a few months ago, how many of those conversations get into the political discourse of what's happening within our community. A movie can turn into talking about how we address disparities when it comes to income, and how we address police brutality, and how we address different issues that you would never think comes out of a movie. And so one of the things, I've jumped really heavy into that, and I would suggest any of you here that have not been to one of our Race to the Movies, you should come out and hear some of those conversations. People get blunt, they get real about how they feel, and they ask the questions that they want to ask that they wouldn't probably ask you in any other forum. So that's what I'm trying to do to try to keep that discourse going.
Good. Who else? Go ahead, Commissioner Lindley.
Okay. I remember Commissioner Daley's dad, Scott Daley, used to admire the person with a snappy comeback. And I actually try to bite my tongue and not come up with those so fast. Because it's very easy when somebody says something that you disagree with to have this quick retort that puts them in their place. And I think it's really much harder and takes a lot of effort on the part of almost all of us to say, okay, I know what my instant reaction is, but let's try to really listen to that person and honestly kind of put yourself in that place. And it's just, it's a constant struggle, I think, particularly when issues get hot and you feel like you have a loyalty to one side or the other. But to cross over, and that takes sincere listening and probably biting your tongue.
Okay.
I'll jump in.
All right.
In 2 weeks when we do the speed dating thing. That's a great example of something we do here that I don't think many communities do. I think what we're doing tonight is something a lot of communities do. But the most important thing, and I said it at the very beginning when we were talking about Myers Park, there are so many times when I've had people come to me that say, well, my neighbor's trying to do this, or their group's trying to do that, and then the other people. And you know, have you sat down and talked? Well, no, they don't want to talk. Have you tried? And when you get people together to actually sit down and have a conversation, civility, talk about what the real issues are, you don't always come out totally thrilled, but you usually come out in a better place than certainly you went in. And so that's something I try to do as many times as I can. I'm going to try to do it in Myers Park, try to do it in Killarney, try to do it in wherever we can. It's important for us to try to have that more happen on a local level all the way down to neighborhoods, because that's when problems are solved, is when people compromise.
I agree. Tonight is a good demonstration. I also think we do something different than a lot of communities through the longest table, where we brought together folks from all cross parts of this community. Just very quickly, I was on the plane leaving the U.S. Conference of Mayors meeting in D.C. on the Thursday before the Friday inauguration. And I got set next to a gentleman, middle-aged white guy from out the suburbs of Atlanta, Georgia. And we were comfortably sitting there just sort of chatting. And then the Delta video, the safety video, came on. And I don't know how many of y'all have seen that lately, but it is a very inclusive video. The pilot is a woman. All the flight attendants are from another country, so on and so forth. And he looks at me and he points at me and he says, how often do you see that? I'm never on a plane with a woman or a women pilot or flight attendants like that, and he just, I just feel like it's overboard. Now, the first thing was, what did I do to give this permission, this guy permission to share this with me? And he was a consultant for the inauguration. He put together sets, stage sets. So he came in to do that work and was leaving D.C. But I kept listening. I kept reminding myself of what we say at the longest table, which is instead of being judging, choose to be curious. And so I actually didn't, you know, sort of engage him in a judgmental way. We just kept talking. And then he talked about the school that his kids go to where there seems to be all these Hispanics. And he doesn't know where they're coming from because they're not in his neighborhood, but they're at his kid's school. And what he was describing was an invasion of some sort. All that to say was, I could have engaged him in a crazy way, but when we landed in Atlanta, I gave him my card. It does say Mayor of Tallahassee on it, and I see that he's sort of struck by it, but he doesn't say anything. I then get an email from him the next day saying, first, you must think I'm a jerk. And then it goes on to say, I Googled you, and I just want you to know that I'm very proud of you. If you ever end up in Atlanta, I'd love to see you. Now, I just think if I had gone where I may have wanted to go, we may not have ever gotten there. And I do plan on looking this guy up at some point when I'm in the Atlanta area. But again, just a reminder, instead of going to our default of engaging in that way, maybe choosing to be a little bit more curious about folks and a little less judging.
Right. Okay, anybody else want to respond on that?
Well, Skip, I just say, personally, what I do is try to make myself available to individuals and groups and organizations in this community that are interested in that kind of dialogue and to make people politically aware of what's happening in our community and the absolute necessity for them to be involved in that process, at the least being willing to get out and elect those individuals that will represent them at all levels of government. Because so few of us now are doing that. The voter turnout in this country is abysmal. I was in Peru. Now, they have mandatory voting in Peru, but they have 85% voter participation in that country. We don't even begin to approach that in most elections. And so as I travel the community, you know, I try to make myself available to groups and organizations and make sure that that's a part of the discussion, is the importance of people being involved in the political process and that their voices can be heard.
Thank you. Commissioner Daley. Oh, Commissioner Dozier, you were raising your hand.
But we're both.
It's okay.
This is a very important question, and I agree with a lot of what's been said. Thinking about this a lot this month particularly, I have for a long time, but I was reflecting on two events I participated in the last couple months. One was at Capital City Youth Services. We slept outside in boxes overnight, as other homeless do, and I was with a lot of conservatives, friends and liberals, and literacy volunteers. We were on stage, and it was a politically diverse crowd. We agree so much, and we work together across party lines when we're here locally. And I think we have to challenge ourselves to think about how we're taking that messaging on national and state issues that seeks to divide us, because it's a 24/7 campaign, and think about how actually we're working locally. I go back to when I was campaigning and I was invited to the Exchange Club at that time. I don't know about now, but it was all old white men and that mostly conservative. And they asked me to talk about sustainable construction. And I walked in and said, I'm not going to convince you that climate change is real. And they were taken aback. They thought I was going to come in with a heavy, heavy hand. And I said, I'm going to tell you the other reasons why we can agree on sustainable construction. They had a robust discussion at the end about their utility costs, about low VOC paint in their grandkids' room, about clean water where they want to go fishing. There are different motivations that get us to the same conclusion. And on the left, I think we are as at fault as the people on the right. And I say that because I am on the left, so I'm speaking, you know, and I think a lot of, you know, I hear that more from my friends and family, but I have a lot of conservative friends, that we need to think about the motivations of everyone else. And really, on the ground here in town, you have friends, you have people you're volunteering with who agree with you, and they're the other side of the aisle.
Okay, Commissioner Daly. I think we will have gotten everybody on this question, didn't we?
Yeah.
Good.
I don't do as well with the personal question, so I'm going to give a shot with a really personal answer. I don't talk about my faith and my religion that much. What have I been doing outside of events like this? I have been doing a lot of praying, a lot of thinking, and trying to reconnect with who I am personally. And more importantly, what do I believe in and how do I move forward? And one of the things that I have figured that is working for me is that I'm proactively trying to reconnect with individuals on an individual level and to seek first to understand, then to be understood. And really trying to reach out and step outside my comfort zone and reach out to people that I don't necessarily engage with on a day-to-day basis with, who I don't agree with, but really try to educate myself and understand where people are coming from in this dialogue and try to do that in an elevated manner where we can have conversations as individuals, not as county commissioners or business people or attorneys. And yeah, it's a little uncomfortable for me to talk about that, but it was a fair question, and I think we're all trying to go through this personal journey one way or the other of how do we reconnect.
Okay, well, thank you all for answering that. I appreciate it. I'm glad you did. I'm going to go back to an audience question. This is from Nicholas Petty, and I'm going to ask this of you, Commissioner Richardson. I'm a student in Leon County and am grateful to be in such a diverse school. However, some other public schools are racially segregated. How is Leon County limiting racial segregation, and what are your plans for this in the future?
Well, you know, Skip, unfortunately, and I guess it's dependent on how you look at it, we have a school district now in a county that is only about 35% African American. We have a school district that's majority minority. And I believe that many of the so-called education reforms that have been put in place, and that's why this lady DeVos is so dangerous as our new Secretary of Education. Because anyone that does not have an absolute commitment to public education, free and appropriate public education, is dangerous. And that would include our former Governor Jeb Bush. I have no problem with private schools, but what I do have a problem with is taking money out of the public schools to give to for-profit corporations whose only intent is to make money off of education. 95% of our students will be educated in a public school, but yet we're taking money out of the public schools and giving them to for-profit charter schools and to school vouchers in whatever name they exist, and not investing in our public schools. And so I think that those kinds of alternatives are what's causing our schools to become more segregated, even in 2017.
Okay. Anybody else want in on that? Good. I have a question.
I think I'm the only one.
From Lydia, and we'll give this to you, Commissioner Ziffer. I volunteer with an organization that works directly with children in the foster system in our community, and through this I've seen some of our most vulnerable populations and the challenges they face. In the aftermath of Hermine, I saw these populations who are without power, resources, and basic communication, who needed medical assistance or information on shelters, but did not own devices to Google or do kind of basic searches that we all take for granted to figure out what was going on and where could they get help. Is there any discussion on improving communications in emergencies with our most vulnerable people that may not be as fluent or even have online access?
That question could have been asked, you know, back in the 80s when Hurricane Kate came through, or previous hurricanes. We still, through traditional media sources, radio, television, your newspaper, provide information as to where people can get help during emergencies like that. Short of going door to door, and we wouldn't know which doors to go to unless we set up some kind of system where people could, I guess, sign up in advance, but how would they know to do that? I'm not sure how we solve that particular question, because that's a really difficult thing to get down on that level, other than for people to hopefully still have the opportunities to listen to radio, because we were doing it. I know that we've set up a relationship with WFSU for future situations when we have hurricanes. We'll be cranking out a lot more information on emergency relief. But it goes back, and I'm sorry for this, I'm going to take the first time I've gone over. I think it goes back, I think it goes back to, once again, living in situations where we have neighbors we can count on, where we have people across the street we can go to and ask for help. And we've fallen into this situation where we just don't do that as much unless you live in Myers Park. So I'm going to say that and move on. Thank you.
That was funny. Commissioner Dozier.
Thank you. I'm going to let that one go. I was going to mention WFSU. I remember as a, I'll let it go, but a 10-year-old during Hurricane Kate for 10 days out of Mississippi Co-op, our communication was the radio. And I heard from a lot of folks in Benjamin Chairs and other areas that that was a missing piece this time. So as Gil mentioned, the after-action report, and if you're really interested in digging in, the consultant, this report had over 140 recommendations for us. And we're partnering with the city, we're implementing it. This has been a pretty incredible assessment of the first storm and how we responded. There was a lot of good things, but the communication piece was a really big one that we dug into. So partnering with WFSU, making sure that they are part of our emergency operations center, which the county is now taking back under the direct purview of the administrator and the board. It had been located under the sheriff's purview for a while. That's under the county commission. It's at the emergency service center, the public safety complex, and WFSU will have a relationship there. So we are taking immediate action to address this question, but a lot of others.
Okay. Commissioner Lindley, what are the city or county governments doing to partner with local educational institutions like TCC and Lively to identify skills and training for job seekers as well as employers?
That's a softball.
It's a question from the audience. You were the next person on the stage.
Really? Okay.
Here comes the 3-0 for Lindley.
Do I have more than 3 minutes for? Okay, we're obviously talking about Leon Works. Leon Works is a program that Leon County started in conjunction with the schools and Lively to get high school students aware of skilled trades, middle skills, where jobs are going wanting for lack of employees. And this is really catching on. We've had the expo 2 years. Just the other day, I had the privilege of speaking with a young professional who's just moved here. He's studying something called educational entrepreneurship, which is basically trying to bring more creativity into education, including getting people who are not going to go to college, and that's about 60% of students, don't want to go to college, can't, won't, whatever, they might go later. And so I think there's a real interest building throughout the state and nationwide in getting back to the old-fashioned middle skills that pay well and give people jobs. I think this also interrupts segregation and that sort of thing, because it spreads jobs throughout a community in all sorts of ways.
Just real quick, I know I can speak for Kristen and Nick on this, that Marianne is being way too humble on this issue. She created the idea of Leon Works. She met with staff and said, I got this great idea that we need to flush out. She worked day in and day out to create Leon Works. By the time it was brought for formal approval, all the heavy lifting had been done. We've had Leon Works now in place for 2 years. We've got communities across the nation that are contacting Leon County asking, how do you do this? This is absolutely fantastic. And she is the one that created it from scratch and brought it before us, and it's been a huge success.
Commissioner Dozier, real quick, and then we have some spoken questions from the audience.
Great. I agree with what Commissioner Daly said. I'm glad Leon Works is moving forward. One great thing we can thank the legislature for, we got $100,000 last year, and there's an apprentice program. And just this week, we changed policy so the apprentices at 17 can work with our EMS folks. The cutoff was 18. So we're making some changes there. But I want to highlight in the fall, I meet with Tousley Builders Association and others often. I kept hearing the TCC contractor programs, the training programs, and the builders. There were issues on both sides. We put them in a room. One day, brainstorming came up with additional ideas. Our next big challenge, this is huge, our next big challenge is making sure businesses think about the apprentice model and get back involved. This is something we moved away from 30, 40 years ago. This is how it used to be done. And that is the next step that we got to really focus on.
Okay, questions from the audience. Remember, keep those nice and brief.
Nice and short. Make them a question if you can, but you've got 30 seconds. And just to remind you, we've got the stoplight there. It'll go green when you start. And then Kathy's pushing the green to show it to me, I'm sure. and then with all, yeah, yay, green. And then it'll go yellow when you've got 10 seconds, and then red. And then a bit after that, you'll hear a sound. Okay, so we're just going to try to keep it at a clip. And we'll hold the mic for you so we just can move. First question.
Hi. So the future of the Department of Education under Betsy DeVos looks like funding for public schools will get cut and potentially replaced with a voucher system for charter schools, who DeVos implied would have no federal regulations, like no universal standards for students or teachers, and no universal accommodations for our students with disabilities. What will you do to protect the education of Tallahassee's children under this future department?
Okay, who wants to, other than Commissioner Richardson, who'd like to take that one?
Well, yeah, we know what Curtis is.
Yeah.
And I agree with him. So your question is a right one, and it is one for the school board because they directly engage with the local public education system. But it is amazing that we are now at this point where the private system, and not just the private system, it's really the corporatizing of what I believe is still one of the last bastions of public good. Yeah, there are problems in it, but as Curtis pointed out, 95% of our kids are still being educated through that system. Consistent with the comment around Leon Works, I 1,000% agree that one of the things that we could do in our public system is have a little bit of a return to this area of trades. You know, we got a tech hire designation from the White House, which causes us to think critically about training folks for the jobs of the future. And that's not sitting somewhere necessarily writing code. It could be working the machine at Radiology and Associates, where they've got positions that they can't fill because they don't have the talent to fill those positions. But we've got to be boisterous, and we've got to push back. But more importantly, local education still, by and large, is controlled by local. And so we've got to make sure that we're holding our local superintendent and school board accountable for the public education system that we want to make sure stays available and equitable for all people.
Okay. Next question.
Yes. I've noticed that the kind of the goal of Village Square is to increase civic participation. And I think part of that civic participation, the reason it's lacking is that there is a lack of a coherent city identity that Tallahassee has. And this is just a small thing I want to ask about. Can we get a redesign on our flag? Tallahassee has a flag, but have any of you ever seen it? It doesn't hang in front of the stadium, the civic center, the town hall. There's none here. But if you look at the great cities of the world, Chicago, Amsterdam, Washington, D.C., they have these iconic, basically, coats of arms that serve as a rallying symbol. And I'd like to see one for Tallahassee.
Let me answer. Okay, go ahead, Kristen. Your county, go ahead.
I do live in the city limits. Thanks, Gil.
Your experience in education as you mentored in a school?
I really don't know where you guys are going because, you know,
the county does include the city limits, so thank you. I was actually going to give you guys a shout out and say that there might have been a time about a year and a half ago where there was a certain message playing at the airport, and it got some of us giggling a little bit because it sounded really, really like describing an old and sleepy community. And I remember the mayor listening to it, and I think you changed it in about a week, and that was pretty cool. We have got more of a story to tell than most people recognize. And to the jokes at the other end of the table, it is a joint story. It is a city-county story, and we need to be unified in this, and I think our efforts on economic development, on the entrepreneur, and on redeveloping the city, I am seeing repeatedly people, I left town for a very short time. I was born here. A lot of my crowd in the 90s couldn't wait to get out of here, right? They're coming back. This is a cool place to live now. We do need to tell that story. So I think the city has taken some actions, county too, and we all need to be a part of that. And I'd love to see brainstorming on a city flag.
Were you talking about the logo? I'm trying to figure out what you were talking about. Okay, I'm going
to... I think we got a committee chair ready to...
I'm gonna argue the point of that is that star is on every vehicle the city has. That star is at the airport. The star is on buses. The star is everywhere. It's tied to economic development. Just about every brand opportunity there is, that star is on it. And it is the logo because we are the capital city, and the T is part of the star. So I'm going to argue, actually, it's a very good one. Now, if you don't remember it, maybe we ought to consider redoing it, but that'll cost a lot of money. I'm not sure I want to go there and do that because there are other things we can do with those dollars.
Who knew the civility bell would come out over the city's flag design? I saw Commissioner Lindley, and then I'll come back to the mayor.
Well, I just think I have a job for the Tallahassee Democrat, which is a flag design contest.
Yeah.
I think that's in your court.
Pass.
I do think flags are great, but I will tell you what I'm loving, and it didn't exist for me when I first came here for college, is that we actually have sides of town. Before it was like the universities and downtown and everything else. South side, obviously, and then north side. We have Midtown, Downtown, Gaines Street Court, G Street, All Saints. And each of these places have their own identities. And it makes it interesting to go and visit them. You now have COCA using this term, talent lives here, which also are the call letters for the airport, TLH. You've got all of these really, I think, vibrant, vigorous hashtags that maybe won't paint Tallahassee as the same thing everywhere, but gives it identity in different places that makes it interesting. And I would actually be a fan of doing that more than I would be anything, continuing that identity.
Okay, next. Oh, sorry.
Just real quick, I think you bring up a valid point, but my only thing about it, I'll say this really quickly, is every flag has a history. The thing that I wondered when you made that comment is not necessarily what the flag looks like, but what's the history behind that flag? And is the story behind that flag something we can all get behind and take pride in? And so before I would totally want to change it, what I would want to know is, when was that flag designed? What was the thought in mind when it was designed? If it's something that we can all kind of say symbolizes what the city of Tallahassee or Leon County actually is.
Okay, here we go.
Hi. We've gotten to a place in our nation, in our state, the city and the county, where we are inundated with the bad about our elected officials. I mean, it's become accepted practice to throw one ethics violation or throw any bit of spit at an elected official, to the point that I think most of us have believe it right away and have a bad feeling about elected officials. My point is, I've gotten to know just every one of you personally over the years. And I think fundamentally we have to change that. We have to get to a point where most people have trust and faith in our elected officials and you folks standing up there. And I wonder how we can get that to change. And I really ask a paper like the Tallahassee Democrat, what can you do to help remove that first stigma that everybody has for elected officials and start to educate them that you are good people and you should be holding them in esteem, not putting them down.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to answer that, and I don't accept the premise of the question. So I think there are certainly outlets in this and other communities that have a business model of dragging people down and, you know, dragging them through the mud, and that's the way they choose to make a living and, you know, whatever. You know, our job is to be a check on these people, and so a check should be done out of fairness and out of the interest of the population at large, of the people that elected them. And so, you know, there's going to be some adversarialness as a part of that, just like there is between a prosecutor and defense attorney. But I don't think you see a lot of hate between me and these people, and hopefully not any vice, you know, coming back the other way. I think we both know we have jobs to do and need to hold them accountable. Does that mean we always agree with how we treat each other or the decisions we make? Of course not. But I think we're in a place a lot closer to Delta Video Guy and the mayor than we are to other places. So if these folks want to disagree with that assessment, they are free to do so. I can take it. But I think, you know, when I look at the people on this stage, I see people who are a part of a system where we play a role and they play a role. So. Well, there's a lot that happens during campaign season on that front where these guys and gals get a lot of opportunity to tout themselves and what they do. We provide them lots of space in the paper, lots of bandwidth video-wise. But look, your point is one that is well taken and that we struggle with in our business. How do we fulfill this watchdog role? And you know, what we hear all the time, well, you're too easy on them. You don't hold them accountable enough. We want you to play that role stronger. And so, you know, that's a balance we're always trying to achieve. We're never going to get it exactly right. I think, you know, there's an old thing, an old prayer about, you know, God, I may not be doing what you want, but at least know, you know, I at least know you recognize that I'm trying. We're trying. We don't always get it right, but we try. It's a great question and a fair one. Yeah. Everybody wants in on this now, yeah.
No, I mean, Skip, you're right. You have a job to do, we have a job to do, and your job is to make sure that we're doing our job as ethically as we can, and our job is to do our job, right? But I will speak to something that my mom told me when I was a little boy. She said, Nick, it's not about what people say about you, it's about what people know about you. And so I always try to make myself as accessible as I possibly can. I try to spend the least amount of time I can in the courthouse and the most I can out in the public, usually at Savannah's, to give people access to me so they know, look, I'm an elected official, but before that, I'm your neighbor. We can talk about anything on any level. And so I think once you get to that level of understanding between the people that you represent and the person that you are, then I think it helps alleviate some of those negative feelings that you have about elected officials. If you don't know them, all you have to do is go off of what you read and you get this perception of what they are. But there's nobody up here who has malice towards anybody else in this room and would do anything intentionally to hurt anybody that they represent. But you don't know that if all you do is read about it. So it's a responsibility on us to make sure that we're as accessible as we can be for you to get to know us. But then again, don't hesitate to approach us. Don't hesitate to ask how our families are doing. Don't hesitate to ask how we're doing. Those are the things that takes it past us just being elected officials, and that makes us just your neighbors.
Okay.
That's where it's at.
Commissioner Ziffer, and then the mayor, and then we're going to go to our next audience question.
I still believe at least in this community, that we elect people because they say things that they want to build, things that they want to do, things they want to accomplish, things they want to change for the better. I don't think we elect people that want to tear things down. And unfortunately, that's not the case in every place. And that's not the case, certainly, in our country and in parts of our state, because sometimes we elect people that want to tear things down. The analogy I give is to produce a car in an assembly line, it probably takes 4 or 5 hours. To wreck it takes a split second. And what we do as a community, it takes years, decades, forever to build up, to do really good things. But we elect people that want to tear things down, it'll take forever to rebuild. I know everybody up here. I've learned and I've gotten to know them since they've been elected, and they're all friends. These are good people. You elect good people, and you should be proud of yourselves for what you do. Now, he does need to keep us accountable, but so far this community looks for the positive, and we all appreciate that because that's important to us.
Well, I was just going to throw in, since Nick Maddox talked about a saying he heard, my grandmother had one, and it said, never ever wrestle with pigs because you both get dirty, but the pig likes it. So that's my motto.
I think it's possible that I'm the pig in that analogy. You'll have to think about it a little bit, though. Oh. Oh, here we are. Sorry.
Hello. I would volunteer on the flag front, but I got a C in elementary school art, so DeVos would have given me an A. I just had a question, super, super specific, super local. But I was blessed to live in an area where I was able to go to school on the south side. And I was able to see the contrast between where I lived and some of the things on the south side as well. But there, I was able to learn the historic importance of Frenchtown, not only to Tallahassee, but specifically to its black history. And I know with the, there were a couple projects advanced in 1998 for development in Frenchtown. I feel like I'm at the Oscars. Except there's no award. So I had a question about the historic Frenchtown sign. I noticed recently there's a development there, but the historic Frenchtown sign, the letters have been dismantled. You might not be able to answer this tonight, but I was wondering if or when it will be reinstated. That I can actually do something millennials never do and part with my phone to show you the image. It's commonly used in the Tallahassee Democrat for Frenchtown, but the sign is now dismantled that says historic Frenchtown.
Okay, know anything about that?
Okay.
Yeah.
Jump in real quick. We have money in the CRA for Frenchtown entryways and other things. I don't know if that is the answer to the question about the sign, but we do have money, the CRA, that I think all of us, Commissioner Daly is not on it, four of the county commissioners, all city, are on the CRA. We're developing a plan really more in the last few years than I think we ever have, more holistic plan for Frenchtown than we have seen in the past. And signage, but also redevelopment of shelter property and other things are going to be part of that. I had to jump in, forgive me, because as you were talking, I bet you went to sale. And I did too. Records, okay. So I went to sale down in Frenchtown, and not living in that area, I still remember that experience. When you brought up the question about the schools, this is what came to mind. It still stays with me. When I sit on the CRA, I have some experience of being in that neighborhood, of appreciating it, of meeting people. Being in school, you don't lose that. And I think crossing those lines is really important. I thought you were down there. But I think we're going to do a lot of stuff in Frenchtown in the next few years. We got to keep our foot on the pedal.
Okay, Commissioner Richardson.
Yeah, just real quickly, I agree with Commissioner Dozier. There are a lot of things that are going to be happening in the Frenchtown area. And as we move forward with redevelopment and revitalization in Frenchtown, we are always conscious of that special history. My father went to high school at Old Lincoln High School, original Lincoln High School. I've been corrected on that. And my aunt and uncle owned a business in Frenchtown, so I'm very familiar with that, the rich history of Frenchtown and what that area has meant to the city of Tallahassee. And so we're conscious of that as we move forward with development. Specific to the sign, I would imagine, and I don't know this to be absolutely correct, but I would imagine that they probably dismantled the sign temporarily because of the development and construction that's going on, and they probably didn't want to damage it.
Okay.
I'm thinking.
Sounds like y'all will check on that, see what the deal is. Okay, question from the audience.
Yes. The Tallahassee Memorial Hospital is owned by the city. A lot of people don't realize that. It's owned through a $1 a year lease, which allows Tallahassee Memorial to control hundreds of millions of dollars worth of assets. The city owns the land, the city owns the buildings, the city owns everything inside the buildings. Yet, Tallahassee Memorial has decided that they are not going to accept patients. They aren't going to allow patients to come into its outpatient clinics. This includes family practice. This includes internal medicine. So evidently, the patients have to get sick enough to go to the emergency room. My question is, as the politicians that run this town, how can you allow Tallahassee Memorial to exclude patients from its outpatient clinics?
Okay, who would like to take that?
I thought that was for you.
I don't believe so. Commissioner Ziffer, perhaps you would like to take that question.
I'll take a stab at it. I personally don't know, Dr. Hollifield, that TMH is specifically excluding. I have not had any of the citizens that I represent come to me and tell me that TMH specifically excluded them from care in their facility. TMH is rapidly becoming a world-class facility in this community. I have. One of my children was born at TMH. We've gotten excellent care at TMH. So I don't want to besmirch that organization and its leadership because it is an important institution in this community. It is where a vast majority of us receive our health care. Doctors are trained there in the residency program. They have an African-American physician now who is the head doctor, I forgot what the title is. But I don't personally know that anyone has been denied care at TMH or in any of its clinics. If that is the case, like I said, I haven't heard it, and I don't know that this community would tolerate anything like that happening, and TMH has been a good community partner.
Okay, next question. Next question, Dr. Hollifield, thank you.
We've seen interesting developments in the College Town area. I've seen the plans in the Bluxom-Firestone area for the working on the city's infill. Can you fill us in more on what's happening on the South Monroe and Adams Street corridor? That's close to the Cascade Parks. It's exactly the type of area it seems that you want to infill. Can you tell us more what's going on there, what we're likely to see over the next year or two?
I can't tell you over the next year or two because, well, at our city commission retreat, we actually had a presentation, and it came as a result of a conversation that I was in on a board that I sit on that's a pedestrian safety, and it had to do with potentially what's called is putting it's a road diet. In other words, looking at maybe doing some things on South Monroe all the way to Magnolia or Orange, where we actually working with DOT to narrow the road down a little bit, create some greater sidewalks, walkability. I don't want to say it's going to look like Gaines Street, but what I'm saying is Gaines Street, we had to actually take from the state that road because at that time they didn't do it. Now DOT actually works with you to try to create that sense of place that will also create greater economic development where you might see more cafes, you might see more retail. That's the idea. And the other part to that, what we talked about, is that would be a good opportunity on that road system to start to underground some utilities. It's got developing streetscape. So I think you're going to hear a lot more about that. We've challenged our staff to go ahead and work towards bringing back to us some of those opportunities we could do. So South Monroe is a great opportunity for the future for the whole community.
Okay, question over here.
My question is actually quite related to the previous question two back. Commissioner, I appreciate your response about access to health care. However, I'm a mental health care provider, and some people are describing our current situation looking at what the Republican-led National Congress is doing, dismantling not only the Affordable Care Act, but also parts of Medicare and Medicaid, as reducing access to care. And so I'm wondering what we as a city or what leaders of our city are doing to make sure that we continue to have access to mental health care for all residents.
Okay. Anybody on the county side want to take that? We've been a little city tilted here. Commissioner Dozier?
I felt like I was talking a lot, but so we all are, right? It's an excellent question. So for county, I think last couple years it's been around $1.2 million that we put into Bond Neighborhood, the We Care program, which are specialists. We put a lot of money into Appalachia for mental health and others. So we have a lot to do in a limited budget with access to care and trying to improve that access to care. But we also look for strategies that help our partners do that. So recently there was a way that Appalachia could get more money for more beds, and it was a tweak in some of the ways that we were providing our funding, and we work through that with the staff, and we did that. So in as much as we can do as a county government, we are trying to improve that access, but we cannot do everything. We know that. I mean, this is a huge issue. I support what the comments that were made about TMH, but they can't solve this problem. This is a national problem, state problem, but we are doing as much as we can, and I think improving the access to mental health, there was a question about homelessness earlier. There's a continuum of care, covers 8 counties for homelessness. The homeless action plan, there's a lot wrapped up in that, and there's better coordination among our agencies and communication to help get people services. So there's a lot happening with the resources we have, and we're going to keep pushing on it.
Okay, Ziffer, Richardson, Daly.
I'll do it real quick. The most vulnerable are our smallest, our youngest, and we have a lot of children that are going to school that have witnessed things at home that no child should see. We have children that are destined for failure in the school system because they are excluded from activities because they had a bad night, because it's something that's no fault of their own, so they're removed from the classroom, and then after a few years of that, we lose them. Superintendent Hannah has agreed. He said he's in 100% to develop one of our community school concepts at Hartsfield Elementary, where we're going to be able to provide mental health care for those youngest, those kids that really need it. I suspect if we're successful there, which we will be, this will show up in more schools. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have more and greater opportunity for mental health for all ages, but those kids, they have no option. It's not their fault what they see at home. We need to try to help them get through that school day so they can be contributing later.
Okay, Commissioner Richardson?
Very briefly, yours is a very good question, and it's been an issue that this country has grappled with for years. I'm a psychologist by training, and so mental health issues have been issues that none of us have wanted to talk about over the years, but they certainly have come to the forefront as of late, because so many of the horrific killings that we've heard about have happened because of people with mental health issues. And we haven't provided them with the kind of treatment and support that they need. 80% of the prisoners in our county jail have some type of mental health issues. Those that we see homeless on the street have some form of mental health issue, and yet we aren't providing them with the care and support that they need. It really is an issue that this country is going to have to come to grips with and say that we're going to put the resources into the systems that provide that kind of treatment and care, or we're going to continue to see horrific crimes like we see being committed because those people aren't getting the care, those individuals aren't getting the care and treatment that they need.
Commissioner Daly.
Curtis is correct, and I appreciate what you do as a profession, and I appreciate you bringing the issue. If the question was asked tonight, one of the big issues that are facing our community I think that we need to take a very serious look, and we are working through this issue in regards to people with mental illness that are currently incarcerated in Leon County Jail. It is unfortunate that the Leon County Jail is the largest mental health facility in Leon County. Many people don't realize that. There are people that are incarcerated right now that do not need to be incarcerated. They need treatment. And we need to address this issue, and it's a community issue, and we're going down this road to address it.
Mayor Gillum.
Yeah, well, the elephant also in the room, because I think you should be well convinced that your local folks are doing what they can. But our contribution is decimal when we compare it to what the federal resource should be in this arena. 1.5 million people in this state who were not extended Medicaid access because we have a philosophical difference that would have come into the state for free and provided coverage. We also have a report that came out, I believe, by the Pew Center that said if Obamacare is dismantled, Florida is one of the top three states that stands to lose the largest number of jobs, over 200 or so thousand jobs associated with this. And so when people say these are national issues, they're very local, and elections have consequences. And this is why it's really important that we really stay involved in this, the evolution of this issue, because it shows up in our local jails and in our local homeless population and in our criminal justice system, so on and so forth. So I appreciate the question, but the answer is manifold at various levels of government.
Okay, we got about 5 minutes left, and Commissioner Maddox promised I'd get him out of here in time for the Duke-Carolina game tonight. So make your question nice and brief, and brief answers, and we can hopefully squeeze in a couple more. Go ahead.
Okay. Greetings, officials and neighbors. There has been a lot in development for entrepreneurship, and there's great programs, SBA, Domi Station, and Domi Station mostly focus on tech startups. Are there any programs on your agenda that focuses on the development of entrepreneurs on the local level to the citizen community, like Leon Works?
So kind of non-tech startups, is that what you're asking about?
Absolutely.
Okay, good question.
Well, I tell you what, Domi does do a great job, but I'm going to defer this question. She's being bashful, but Commissioner Dozier has done a lot with entrepreneurship here in Leon County. And so, I mean, I'm going to let her get the first whack at this. She's like, I don't want to pick up the microphone and talk.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. I am blown away every day by the progress we've made in the last 6 years. And it's not just what the city or county might have done. I think we did help a lot in providing space for Domi, but that is a local group running on their own. And what I mentioned before about OEV, the Economic Development Organization, being a catalyst, I think this is one of the most crucial pieces, because we need a lot of other programs. But a few that are in the pipeline, we had a committee look at our minority and women programs for access to public policies, public contracts, and started thinking about training for women and minority contractors. There's the Kitchen Share over at the Frenchtown Farmers Market. That will be an incubator and in helping people stand up different types of food service businesses. There's the Pod, where if you're in communications, you can go in there and work with others and start your business. At Innovation Park, we have tried for years to turn that ship around. We had to clean up a lot, y'all might remember. And next year, we will open our first facility with a maker space for robotics or other prototypes, wet labs, light manufacturing for entrepreneurs. So you've got a lot of different things coming online for different types of businesses, and we need to keep doing more. It's a good question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Very quickly. Mm-hmm. Also, the Small Business Development Center housed at Florida A&M University is an excellent source for business startups in the community.
Okay, I think this will be our last question. We got 2 minutes left, so you're up.
The town hall forum is a critical format of engaging in democracy. Look at the diverse and engaged crowd that's gathered today. I appreciate previous events and planned events that take different formats, but specifically the town hall forum conversations need to continue. Tonight was billed as an annual event. annual. At the pace of change at the federal level seen in the past month alone, we need to keep meeting with our local leaders as a community in the town hall forum. I asked the panelists, shall we increase town hall frequency and host state senators and representatives among our panelists?
I'll take a whack at that. I think yes. The answer to that is definitely yes. And then you talked about the our state legislators and our federal people as well, and even our school board and our superintendent. You know, you could have a different series of these every month. I think there were some questions here that was asked by education that our school board and our superintendent should have a chance to speak upon. That's another event we could have in another month. But I think what it does is having your local city and county elected officials here in this moment allows you to ask us those questions, right? If you had every elected official in town, what happens is you get a little bit lost, right? So if we were able to break it down to where we could have a series where it's maybe the city and the county, and the next time it's the sheriff and the police chief and so on and so forth, you're right. We can have a bunch of these. And I think it does help when you have this kind of discourse between the elected officials and their constituents. One more thing I'll say to you real quick is, and me and Marianne were talking about this initially in the beginning, the diversity of this crowd is the most diverse I've seen it since we started this event. And I don't know what the reason is, but you all need to pat yourselves on the back about how diverse it is. I'm not talking about just old and young. I'm talking about black and white. I'm talking about all around. The more this can happen, but the more diversity that we can add to it, the better off we'll be. Thank you.
Okay, so we have one gentleman that's been waiting a while. Real quick question, and then we'll wrap up.
I'm actually a passenger on the city bus, and my question is that where I stay at, I have to walk a quarter mile to the bus stop. And I was just trying to figure out why does Lake Jackson has a bus, but we don't have a bus by the airport.
Okay. Anybody want to take that?
Yeah, I can't answer that question tonight, but if after this you will give me your name and a contact number, I will find out an answer for you. One of the things we've got to do with our public transportation system, we've got to be much more customer friendly to those who primarily depend on that service for basic daily living needs, getting to work, getting to doctor's appointments, getting to school even now, Skip. And so we can certainly look into your specific situation.
Okay. Reese, raise your hand. Our assistant city manager in charge of our Reese, raise your hand. He's the guy.
Okay. Thank you all for coming. I would like you to clap for them and them to clap for you. Okay? Thank you.